And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, it's another week here at Bills Training Camp, St. John Fisher University. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Day 7 on the practice field is in the books. Welcome to August as the calendar flips.
And boom diggity.
Yeah, there's a lot to
We're
get
to. We're
in
the month with football.
A lot of stuff on the practice field today. We'll pass that all along to you in due course. And obviously there is league-wide news as well, as the Deshaun Watson suspension was handed down by Judge Sue Robinson in the form of 6 games, no fine. And she recently released her full decision. And we'll read you basically her conclusion of it, which I found interesting because she was citing the fact that Watson's violations under the personal conduct policy she considered post hoc definitions, meaning the violations were drawn up as violations of the policy after the alleged behavior occurred. And her argument is, how can you hold someone responsible or penalize them heavily for conduct that was not spelled out under the policy until after the behavior was already committed?
Right, I get it.
I mean, it seems like a lot of legal mumbo jumbo to me.
And we all know, we can all see it with our own eyes. Here's the problem. If you got to spell out what Deshaun Watson, I mean, who can anticipate, what are they going to do next? If you kill 3 people with an axe, you should get suspended for, you know, they got to spell all that out.
Yeah. Here's the problem, and we've talked about this.
And I'm just exaggerating to make a point.
There's no hard and fast evidence. It's largely a he said, she said case, especially on the civil side of this.
Yeah.
There were no criminal charges brought against him. He was not indicted by 2 grand juries. So, look, I'm not a legal expert by any means, but on the surface, it appeared to be a weak case for the league to adjudicate and prove. Because there was no evidence. It was he said, she said, and
he said, they said.
Yeah, he said, they said. You're right.
The problem is, and I get it, but you knew it was going to be very unsatisfying for the general fan base of the NFL.
Yep.
And even, you know, Deshaun Watson fans. This was going to be very unsatisfying when it got to this point, because as soon as the grand juries didn't bring charges and they said it's no criminal charges, it was like, well, then, you know, what are they going to do? You know, if he didn't commit a criminal act, as disgusting as it was, what are they going to do with him? And you knew it was going to be unsatisfying for the rest of us to have all this stuff come out and then have him get off with, you know, a 6-week vacation. So, and fining him, what, like 1% of his total contract?
Well, he loses it because of the suspension.
No, it's like 0.02 of his contract.
He loses,
oh, my gosh.
$333,000 this year because the Browns, knowing the suspension was probably coming, structured his contract where he was only making $1 million in base salary this year. So by missing 6 games, he forfeits $333,333. And that's kind of where it lands. And I know there are a lot of people out there that are far from satisfied that justice has been served. Not that, you know, the league is the law. But I think what rubs people the wrong way is, for example, DeAndre Hopkins used PEDs, gets suspended for 6 games. Calvin Ridley bet on a game in which he picked his own team to win. He loses $11 million because he's suspended for at least the 2022 season. And then you've got Watson, who's got 24 litigants against him and, you know, according to a New York Times article, sought out the services of almost 70 different female massage therapists in an 18-month period. It's all very unsavory, but there's no evidence. DeAndre Hopkins, there was evidence. Here's the test. Guilty. Calvin Ridley, did you bet on that game? Yeah, I did it. Guilty. Hand down the punishment. Here, you don't have any evidence. And it's the same thing. Like Ben Roethlisberger, when he got in trouble, there was no preponderance of evidence. Six games. Ezekiel Elliott, same thing. No hard and fast evidence. Six games. So, Sue Robinson, you can say what you want. She's following past precedent in cases that did not involve any hard and fast evidence. I'm not applauding her. I'm not happy with it either. But, man, oh, man, it's tough. It's just the optics are not good for a league that is trying to purport itself as being one of female empowerment, upward mobility for females in this league. And then you get this, which wasn't the league's decision. It was an independent arbitrator. We should make that clear. But it just doesn't. It just doesn't ring true.
You're right. And I know they say, hey, it's going to look bad for the league. Well, it's, you know, the league. You can fault the league, and really, the fault is, and where I'm sitting here today, the fault is that they couldn't anticipate something this egregious by one of its players, and therefore didn't put in a punishment severe enough for this kind of thing. If it happened, they just lacked the imagination. You know, they just lacked the imagination of seeing something this egregious happening, and this unsavory happening. And so they didn't include it in the CBA, so now they can't punish the guy for it. That's the problem. It's not they didn't want to.
And Sue Robinson, in her conclusion, kind of slapped or wagged her finger at the league.
Said you can't
The NFL may be a forward-facing organization, but it is not necessarily a forward-looking one. Just as the NFL responded to violent conduct after a public outcry, so it seems the NFL is responding to yet another public outcry about Mr. Watson's conduct. At least in the former situation, the policy was changed and applied proactively. Here, the NFL is attempting to impose a more dramatic shift in its culture without the benefits of fair notice to and consistency of consequence for those in the NFL subject to the policy.
Yeah.
So they feel she's clearly stating, in her opinion, that the league is doing an end around or trying to do an end around on Deshaun Watson by saying, hey, that's not right. And even though it wasn't in our personal conduct policy specifically in 2020, it is now, and you should face the consequences. You can choose that to be right, wrong, or indifferent. Clearly, the independent arbitrator here, Sue Robinson, felt that it was, and nefarious is a strong word, but a little out of hand in terms of what they were trying to do.
It's not that none of us think there should be punishment, but legally you can't do it because of where the CBA, and this CBA was done just 2 years ago, and they took Roger Goodell out of the loop. What remains to be seen is if the league will appeal it.
They did say that they received the decision. They have 3 days to appeal. They are contemplating their next steps, was the statement from the league office today. So we'll see. We'll know by Wednesday if they're going to appeal it or not.
Right.
Hard to predict what they're going to do. They're clearly not satisfied with the suspension. They were pushing for a year or indefinite, similar to the Calvin Ridley suspension for gambling. I don't know if they're going to get there. I just don't
think
they're
going to
get
there. And even if they – well, here's the problem, and here's – if the league appeals – the appeal goes to somebody who is appointed by the commissioner. And then the commissioner's back in the saddle as the guy, the sole arbitrator. The union won't like that. But,
The whole thing's unsavory.
It's completely unsavory. Now, even if the league wanted to suspend him forever, they couldn't get it done.
Yeah.
You know, and... yeah, all of us, you know, everybody's got their own idea about how long he should be suspended for, you know, whatever, and whether he should be suspended or not, or for how long, and whatever, the fine, none of us are going to be satisfied now, and it seems like it's going to be dragged on. At least, we'll see Wednesday. It'll be interesting. What do you think the league does, Brown? Do you think they just drop it and say, all right, let's just be done with this?
They might.
They might.
They might. If they don't feel like they have any recourse and that an appeal is a waste of time. Yeah, I could see them saying.
Yeah. One of the things about this, that Sue L. Robinson, is whether you're satisfied with her ruling or not, they brought her in as a retired high-level court, you know, judge. She knows the law, and her opinion that we, you know, in the report that we've just, you know, we're all reading and finding out about right now may be whether the league feels like it has a thumbs up or thumbs down to go ahead and appeal. Her arguments obviously make good sense legally. Does the league want to draw this out and get the pound of flesh, a bigger pound of flesh out of Deshaun Watson than they've got? We'll see.
Yeah,
I would kind of think they're ready to say, listen, that's an arbitrator. We'll trust her, and we're going to go. Maybe that gets it put away quicker.
Possible. What we do know about this as it pertains to the Bills is the Bills will face the Cleveland Browns this season with Deshaun Watson in the lineup, provided he's healthy. Bills host the Browns in Week 11. I believe it's November 20th. And provided that he's healthy, Deshaun Watson will be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns against the Bills in Week 11, because he'll be eligible to return to the lineup in Week 7. So that's where that stands. He's also able to practice right now. Suspensions like this, you're allowed to practice in the preseason. Once the regular season starts, the suspension is imposed, and then he can't practice or play games for the Browns at that point for those 6 weeks. So that's kind of where that stands. Bills training camp today. Another beautiful day out here at St. John Fisher. The weather has just been outstanding on all fronts. Bills got a little healthier in some places and maybe a little less healthy in some places today. Not practicing was Tim Settle, a new addition to the injury report, due to a minor, what was considered by Coach McDermott to be a minor groin injury. So he was on the sidelines watching practice today. Returning to the practice fold, Deion Dawkins back with the team after tending to a personal matter. Micah Hyde back on a limited basis today. Didn't do any team segments of practice, but back from that hard fall he took going up for an interception over the weekend and landed on his right rear and hip and was out there running around, looked like he was moving well, but still not back in the team's segments of practice. And then, unfortunately, during practice, Tommy Doyle, during teamwork, left the field and was holding his side. That injury is yet to be identified, but looks like it's upper body. He was kind of holding his side on the way off the practice field, walked off under his own power, but went straight to the locker room. So we'll see what that is in the coming days. And beyond that, it's an offensive line that really needs to get healthy sooner rather than later, Steve, because as we saw in practice today, this was a defense day. They dominated. Pass rush-wise, in terms of sacks, there were about five, and interceptions, of which there were four today.
Mm-hmm.
Two of which came during the two-minute drill segments of practice towards the end. And the guys with the interceptions today, Jaquan Johnson, Christian Benford, who's been playing well and is getting more playing time on the field of late, the rookie day three pick. Jamarcus Ingram, undrafted rookie, had an interception, as did Tremaine Edmonds. So four interceptions today, a handful of sacks. The offense has really had some difficulty just executing because the penetration up front has been so good. But when you're missing Spencer Brown, Roger Saffold, Ryan Bates, Spencer Brown still not in the team portions of practice
yet.
The
last couple of days, Deion Dawkins has been gone.
Right. Dawkins was back today. That helped.
But
it has really compromised any continuity on the offensive line and with the execution of the attack.
Yeah, and not only do they have their best players sitting around watching, the guys that are in there are shuffling in different positions. They're moving them around all the time, which they do normally, but
more than usual.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, you got,
because they're so
right
short-handed.
Tackle, they're going out, he's going to left tackle. Now they got this guy playing right guard instead of left guard. That, you know, all this kind of stuff that's going on. And it shows up certainly against a defense that's got an upgraded pass rush and who's starting to feel themselves a little bit. It's hard to execute your offense in that. And they're not doing a very good job. They're struggling. But, you know, Josh still throwing it pretty good. But you're right. The penetration's getting there much quicker than they have in the past. And, You know, I don't know. It's a combination of an upgraded pass rush and an offensive line that's a mess right now. Now, it's still early. I mean, we haven't even played a preseason game yet, so you got 3 weeks of games.
Yep.
Plus a week leading up to the very first game, more than a week to lead up to the first game. So we're a long way away. And if you're going to suffer a rash of just nagging injuries, now's the time to do it. But nevertheless, I think it's really tough on the offense to execute when things are a mess up front. And obviously, too, the offense is always behind the defense in weeks like this in the early in training camp because, you know, all it takes is one guy to get a hand on a play, and whether the defense was lined up right, offside, doing all this,
yeah,
and the defense wins the rep, you know. So it's tough for the offense to look good at this point in the season anyway.
Of the sacks today, I have most of the guys that had them. Shaq Lawson had one. Matt Milano had one. Ed Oliver had one. And there were two others that I did not get the license plate number on. My vantage point was blocked. I may have to go up top to see better again. I sometimes jump up in the stands to get a better bird's eye view of everything, and I don't run the risk of having my vantage point blocked
vision
by somebody
impaired
coming in front of me.
Right.
Players kind of clogging, yeah, up.
It's kind of nice, though, today. You and I were out there, and we had to, like, dodge traffic coming off the field once in a while.
Yeah. Had some action coming straight at us. Kinda Case
nice.
Keenum right up in our living room on a scramble,
yeah,
play.
Yeah.
And some defenders following in hot pursuit.
I was
Steve, just for the record, as Case Keenum was making a beeline for us, he's about 10 yards away. Steve not only saves himself from peril, he shoves me towards the danger. And, you know, fortunately, me, with my cat-like quickness, I was able to step out of the way in time as Steve had turned and was running, hightailing it down the sideline.
I did not do that. I thought about it, but I did not.
I got a little nudge there.
I did not. I was just breaking down. I was just, you know, getting my base. My elbows came, both elbows came up, and I was
given. Steve's knocking me into the pile here. Look at this.
Listen, there's a lot of people out here that needed lessons on where to run when the play's coming at you. You don't, like, turn and run away from the play. You run up the field, along the sideline. You run along the sidelines in the direction that the play's coming from.
Yeah.
So because it, you know, those you saw
could
it
still
today,
catch up to you.
They cut a swath of destruction when they come off that field, man. It's you got to get out of the way.
It was pretty close. Saran Neal was kind of like, I heard him fly by.
Yeah, and they don't care either, man. They'll run right through you. So yeah, it took me a second, but I'll say this, if on film, I'll bet you I look good because I started breaking down about, he was 10 yards, 15 yards away, and I knew.
You got an early read,
like,
on
it. Yeah. So I was very happy about that part of
That's
my
right.
game today.
There was a little bit of punting competition today between Matt Hawk and Matt Ariza, and Steve and I watched every single one of them. They each got, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They each got 8 punts, all in succession, which I got to tell you is something that most punters don't do. Most punters don't hit 8 times in a row in a segment. You get a little leg weary by the time you get to 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, they usually
alternate, right? These guys did 8 in a row. It's like, all right, let's see what your endurance is like.
Right.
I would say that Ariza was the more consistent of the two today from what I witnessed, not only in terms of distance, but hang time as well. And I know you and I were talking about this. If you've got a young guy with a lot of ceiling that he has not yet reached, and you have a veteran, and they're relatively even in terms of consistency, you side with the upside. Because the veteran is probably all he's going to be.
He should be.
While
he should be as improved as he's going to get.
While, you know, the rookie, especially one that hasn't had a plethora of punting experience, because he went to San Diego State to be a place kicker first, then became a punter after that. So he's still young in the position, and he was good enough to get drafted for
it. It's easy to see.
So you side with the upside, I would think.
It's easy to see his potential still being gained and still being a high end. And you're right. I mean, every once in a while, that guy hits one, and it's a big one. I mean, and I also noticed this, too. He only had one punt that was under 40 yards, and it was an Aussie kick, you know, an end-over-end kick.
He's working on that technique.
Yeah, it looked good, but the rest of them were all well over 4 seconds. And, I was impressed by the fact that his whatever inconsistencies he had, the bad punts weren't all that bad. Yeah, and that's crucial.
And there was no fatigue in his leg either, because his eighth punt was his best punt. It was the highest right. hanger, best combination of distance and hang time.
Right.
Was his last punt 4.87 on the hang time.
Right.
He had two kicks over 4.8 in hang time. By my watch, Matt Hawk had only one, and then he had a 4.71 as his next best after that. So, take it for what you will. That's kind of where the punting competition is, and we'll probably learn a whole lot more in the preseason games, maybe more than anything else. As far as players that have impressed, have we did,
is that me?
As
that
far as players me. That have impressed, we got a phone ringing here. As far as players,
hello,
anybody there? Are we call? Did we not pay the water bill? What happened?
Jay Harris is jumping up and down trying to figure out how to get that.
The water bill.
It's just RFP. They're not hearing it. Nobody's hearing.
No, all right.
Oh, I see.
Well, we'll do what we can. So here we are. We apologize for any technical difficulties that we may have experienced there while we were taking phone calls from telemarketers in the middle of the show.
I'll demand an explanation at the break.
That's right, and I'm sure we'll get a good one. As far as players that impressed, though, I would say over the last few days, some of the young guys that are getting a little more time on the field, due in part to the fact that there are injured players not in the lineup or players that are not cleared for team segments of practice. You and I noticed a couple of these guys, Christian Benford, getting right. more time on the field. He made the most of it today with an interception to end a two-minute drill drive by the second team offense. The ball on fourth down goes through Khalil Shakir's hands, and Benford is right there to snatch it up and make the interception, which basically ended the drive. Had some nice plays today and is going against some top-flight competition. Undrafted rookie out of UCLA, the offensive tackle, Alec Anderson. Steve and I noticed him a couple of days ago. Kid has good feet, mirrors well in pass protection, pretty light on his feet when it comes to changing direction to a counter move on the pass rush.
Yeah.
And does okay in the run game.
I haven't had a chance to evaluate him in the run game.
He's getting more time on the field of late, and it's due in part to the fact that there are injuries.
And I don't know if he's playing outstandingly, but he does not stand out as being bad. I mean, you don't see his guy getting around him. You don't see him whiffing or standing there by himself after the play because the guy got by him so quick. He does not seem out of place. And for a rookie free agent on
he's holding his own,
line,
I think would I be a fair way to describe it.
I think he's doing a little better than holding his own, but I'd like to hear a coach's evaluation who –
Yeah,
knows what he's supposed to be doing, and then also has a little bit more depth of comparison to what else, the other guys he's looking at. But you're right. I think he's exactly what you said. If he's big enough, and I was talking to people about it, if you're big enough as an offensive lineman to move your feet and get in front of whoever's there, if they're a fast athlete and you can move your feet good enough to at least get in their way, you know what I'm saying? He's not one of those guys going to whiff on a guy because he's got good feet. That's a great place to start. And consistently, you're right, Brownie, he is at where he is supposed to be in battling. And
he doesn't have bad snaps.
Yeah, exactly.
He might have a stalemate snap, but he doesn't have bad snaps.
Yeah.
And I think that consistency is very attractive, especially for an undrafted rookie.
Now, I'd love to see our offensive line have the five guys out there that we're going to look for in the regular season. But in the meantime, you find guys like Alec Anderson who you may have a chance to stick around and hang in there.
As far as the two-minute drill drives went, the first team offense finished with a touchdown with 8 seconds left on the clock. Josh Allen gets them down to the goal line on a beautiful seam pass to Dawson Knox. It gets marked at the two, and then on the very next play, Allen hits Diggs on an inside route for a touchdown to end the drive with a touchdown, 8 seconds left on the clock. Second unit got the ball at midfield with 1:05 left on the clock. Don't know if they had any timeouts. We were not in the huddle.
Mm-hmm.
That drive ended, as I said earlier, on a 4th-and-1 at the 24-yard line. Case Keenum's pass to Khalil Shakir goes through his hands and into the waiting arms of Christian Benford, who then fell to the ground with the interception with 22 seconds left in that drive. The third unit did not get much to work with. They got 30 seconds on the clock, and they were at their own 40 to start the drive. And after an offsides penalty by the defense, there was a sack. And then Matt Barkley was intercepted with a ball late back across the field. Jamarcus Ingram picked off the pass. They ran two more plays just to get guys some reps, but those were both batted passes. So that was a tough one. Then the offense came out one more time, and that's when Tremaine Edmonds had the interception. So
yeah,
a rough go of it
on the Tremaine
for the
offense. On the Tremaine Edmonds interception, he was going to Diggs, who was, you know, was double covered, and then Tremaine Edmonds dropping out as a third guy. And I think Josh decided pre-snap he was going to see if he could get the ball to Steph. I think Steph had a quiet day because it seemed like he didn't get targeted at all, except on that little slant touchdown that they got on the drive before that. So Josh was trying to make an effort to get Steph Diggs the ball and kind of stared him down. And that's why Tremaine Edmonds was in the spot to get that interception. He was just watching where Josh was looking, and Josh was going to Diggs no matter what.
A couple of minor scraps in practice today.
Good stuff there, though.
Tavon Austin and Saran Neal locked up with each other.
Yeah.
And
that was
after a couple of swings and misses, the rest of the people came in, and then it just turned into a giant mosh pit, and those two left the scene.
Tavon Austin and Saran Neal were like the little matchstick that sparked a little
light
fire.
The fire, right?
And then they threw the matchstick into the trash with the matchstick.
We're out of here.
And everything else burned up. They went back and watched the world burn after they'd had their little scuffle. Yeah. The guys that went in to break it up, it turned into, you know.
And then there was one later.
It was great.
I didn't get the numbers on that because the pile was in there rather quickly. But there was another one later in practice as well. There was also, quite possibly, a football follies kind of play today. So
great one.
Josh Allen throws a pass to the right side of the field. It's tipped.
I think he was trying to get it to Khalil Shakir.
So it's tipped by an offensive player. Then it's tipped by a defensive player.
I think so,
yeah. It's still in the air. And who comes down with it? Deion Dawkins, who races the end zone.
One hands it, scoops it in, brings it to his body.
And Deion high-stepping the last 20
exactly
yards.
Exactly right.
And the crowd absolutely ate it up. Anytime you got a 300-pounder running anywhere with a football, it's entertainment value through the roof.
If I was, he was good. He kind of did a flip into the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I was disappointed in his celebration. If I'm doing that in training camp, I'm embarrassing myself and everybody at the place with my celebration.
You're going completely over the top.
Absolutely going, yes, fully over the top. But he was good. He's probably tired.
Yeah, that was a long run for him.
It was. It was like a 65-yard run.
Noticed O.J. Howard a little more today in the passing game. Made some nice plays. Josh hit him late across the middle. That was a good 30, 40-yard gainer. Put him in the red zone where they eventually scored late on that drive. So he's made a couple more plays the last couple of days. It's encouraging to see that as he's kind of settling into this offense.
Yeah, he's an unknown.
He is.
He's 2 years removed from an Achilles tear. That's a hard thing to come back from.
Especially at this level.
He's a very gifted athlete, and he's probably looking to have a fresh start and has some high hopes for what he can contribute this year, and so does the team. But the guy's a physical specimen, and he's thick. You know, for a guy, he's
a
big dude. He's a
giant human being.
For those of you who've been out to training camp, you know what I'm talking about. So he's one of those guys that looks like he's full of potential. So I'm with you. I don't know what to expect from him because he had a hard time in Tampa Bay after being an extremely high draft pick. And it just didn't work out for him there for whatever reason. He's got a world championship as a member of that team.
Yeah.
But you know, he's come a long way from being a top 10 pick in the NFL draft.
Speaking of Achilles, we saw Ike Butker at practice and then walking back to the locker room. And, you know, we basically told him it's good to see you walking out here. You know, after the Achilles injury late last season, he's still on the long road back from that. But it's good to see him up and around. You know, he was pushing his one leg around on a cart for a long time.
Yeah.
And we asked him how he's doing. He's like, well, I'm walking. So that's a plus.
Yeah.
Wanted to pass along the Twitter question for you today. What will be the biggest benefit to the Bills' defensive backfield in 2022? Will it be a fully healthy Tre'Davious White, better pass rush from the D-line, position depth, or something else? You can let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. You can hit us up on the tweet sheet at 1BillsLive. We will take a break here, but when we come back, we will be hearing from one Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver addressing the media after practice today. We will hear from him next here on 1BillsLive, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to 1BillsLive. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here at Bills Training Camp at St. John Fisher. And day 7 is in the books, the first day of August 2022. Another strong day for the defense, although they were going against an offensive line that has been shorthanded, and the supply line got a little shorter with Tommy Doyle suffering an injury in practice today. There to take advantage, though, was a guy by the name of Ed Oliver, who had another sack today and has looked very strong in O-line, D-line, one-on-one pass rush drills. Ed spoke to the media after arriving at his press conference, Steve, on a motorized two-wheel scooter. We're going to talk about that after. In the meantime, here is Bills defensive tackle Ed Oliver.
Well, I think Daquan showed up with a scooter, and I was like, you know what? I need a scooter, so I just went and got one. And that one been reliable. They had a couple problems with theirs. Theirs was not Segway, by the way. And they had a couple problems with me. I'm still rolling strong. So.
You trying to get a sponsorship?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Segway, come on. Come here. Oh, definitely. Definitely. Oh, yeah.
And I think last year, maybe towards the end of the year, second half, you were playing, maybe saw the best football of your career. First, would you agree with that?
Yeah.
What's your reason for that?
Just feeling comfortable, getting got my body back healthy, you know, just. Playing free, playing comfortable, you know. So,
yep. So is it really cheating when you and Bob Miller are on the same side?
I say so. To be honest, though, it is cheating when we're on the same side. It's definitely a win, but when we're on opposite sides from each other, it's even better. Like, I know Mitch said on the same side, you got to make sure you take care of them, but when we're on opposite sides, it's like, which one do you take care of? So, either way, it's fine with me.
What's that feel like?
I mean, that feel good, to have a guy that caliber who's been in the league and have so many stripes to be like, yeah, I got some help, you know what I'm saying, and embrace me, you know what I'm saying? That's like, man, you got Vaughn, you know, happy to play with you, excited to play with you, excited to have you side by side going to war with you, know, that just mean a lot to me, you know, and just helped me as far as, confidence-wise and, knowing that I can count on him and he can count on me. And not only, don't get me wrong, not only Vaughn, but like Greg and his growth and like Phil being back and Daquan and like all us rushing together and just getting AJ, just all us rushing together and getting a feel. Like it's not just Vaughn. Vaughn can only do so much, but just us as a unit just coming together and just rushing. It don't matter who's winning, but is everybody in position? Is everybody ready to make each other right? And that's the thing, this camp that's really been standing out, so what if one guy's winning? It's all four of us winning. It don't matter how you look at it, everybody winning. So that's just been a big thing. Yeah.
What can you be better at?
We ain't win the Super Bowl, so, I mean, you know, you always got to strive for something. Being number one is good. I know we want to repeat, but at the same time, we got a championship mindset. We're trying to go get something. We're trying to earn the right to go play in a game of that magnitude, you know. So just being able to play good late in games, late in the year playing good, having everybody healthy. It's a lot of things that go into having a good defense and just being number one and not enough, you know.
And in that sense, what does find a way, and I see the big banner right there, what does that mean to you, and why do you think that's being emphasized this year?
Because you got to find a way. A lot of these teams are evenly matched. I could think last year, or there were 4 teams lost by a touchdown in the second round of the playoffs last year. It's so close that, you just got to find a way. it's nothing really separating these teams besides a player or two. Like, literally, a player or two is separating these games because these teams are so, like, evenly matched. So, like, you just got to find a way, whether that be out here when it gets hot and pushing all the way through, or when you're back in Buffalo, even though it's cold, finding a way, just finding a way. I don't necessarily care for them, but if the league mandated, I mean, I wear it. But they do kind of aggravate me.
How do they aggravate?
They just heavy. I mean, it just make you heavy. It's heavy. I like the way my helmet feel without it. I've been playing without it for this long. I just don't like it.
What do you look like with that on?
A bobblehead. They should, huh?
You've been in the backfield a lot so far and through 8 days. Do you feel like you've added to your arsenal of moves since last season?
Just tighten them up, making me more precise with my hands, more precise with my feet work, and just rushing together with other guys. You know, we got a good feel for each other right now. Just carrying that over to the season is going to be key.
Von being here, I mean, obviously you're you. You've got to be you. Aaron Donald got his own game. But have you watched the Rams, any video of the Rams last season, just to see Von and Donald and Von and the other Rams work together?
Yeah, I noticed they was rushing on opposite sides of each other. And I mean, they were just killing people, you know. And as far as AD goes, AD has his own game. He's a smaller, twitchier guy. Like, of course, I'm going to watch his stuff, but his game is more so twitch and hands. And that's just, I mean, he's just on another level with that. So I can't say enough about that guy.
How does it help not just you, but the entire defensive line's confidence when a guy like Von Miller comes in and is singing your praises already on the type of players he gets to play with every?
I don't know, man. It just, right now, I know Von Miller is Von Miller, but at the same time, Von Miller kind of like, he didn't evolve into like my brother. You know what I'm saying? So like, I don't look at Von as like how the media might portray Von as. Two-time Super Bowl runner. I look at Von as the goofy Von that I go in the locker room and chill with him, you know, hang out with every day. So it's kind of like, at first it was kind of like, man, we got Von in here, but now he more so like my brother than Von Miller. It's like that Von.
How quick was that transition into like, oh, damn, it's Von versus like, oh, that's my teammate now?
Probably like this count. Like, we probably been getting closer like during the walkthrough in the afternoon, the walkthrough, probably like when I really got to see like who Von is and like, he really kind of just opened up and just started talking more. And Von, like a smooth dude, he really a cool dude. He a fun time to be around.
Has anything surprised you about him personality-wise that you didn't think he would be like?
Well, yeah, like, you think, like, he won two Super Bowls. He could act however he want to act, but he's really like a down-to-earth guy. He talk to anybody. I mean, Von is just Von, and he's not too scared to be who he really is. So, Von is Von.
You know, it's like going from year one to year two for yourself.
Uh-huh.
What have you seen from Greg Rousseau going from year one to year two?
Just the growth. I was watching him on Instagram. He was posting workouts, and I could tell that he was, like, serious about, you know, his craft and just following him through the offseason and seeing how he came back in shape, ready to go. You know, and just him coming into his own self, like, him opening up more and talking more and, like, you know, playing around, joking around a little bit more, just feeling comfortable where he's at. You could just tell, you know. You get older, and, you know, you just open up more.
Then Jordan Phillips is back. Just what do you think of what you've seen from him and through eight days?
I think the first padded practice, Jordan was on fire. I mean, just that's what we need out of him. Just him just to be a dominating force. I mean, talk about a guy who could just bully somebody. Like, we need that. And that's exactly what we're getting out of him right now. And, I mean, I just can't say enough about him.
This training camp so far, is it more intensified than previous training camp?
I wouldn't say it's more intensified. I just, to be honest, I'm having the most fun in the training camp I've had, just making plays, flying around, just hanging out with the guys. Everybody making plays, not just you. You celebrating with the guy. You know what I'm saying? Von make a good rush, like, yeah, I know, you're the guy that there. I make a good rush, yeah, you got him now. Phil make a good rush, yeah, you're the guy him now. You know, just knowing and understanding, like, it's not just Von good or Ed good or Jordan good or Daquan good or Greg good or Boogie good. Everybody good. So it's been fun, like, to be around and, like, see the different guys making plays. Brandon Bryant good. The young guys good. Like, everybody's making plays, so that makes the day go by faster. Keeps the energy high. I mean, just D-line right now is special.
Talk to him about last season. As it was happening when you were – had all those called back sacks. Like, now that you look at those a year later, what are you able to take from those moments where you were really close and, you know, now that you're looking at the season as a whole?
Like, I try not to think about that. I just want to go out there and play free, and if the sack get called back, oh, well. That's I mean, there's nothing else you can do about it. Just go get another one, I guess. Just, I don't know, oh, well.
Sure, I saw you down for a brief moment after a play when you got in the backfield. Everything good? You got a
player? Yeah, everything good.
All right, that's Ed Oliver addressing the media after practice today. He said, in part, this defensive line is special of Jordan Phillips. He said, Jordan is a bully up front.
Yeah, the pads came on. He said Jordan took off and started playing. I mean, that he was in midseason form right there, his first day of pads. And it's good to hear. And we all knew that it's going to be a very different defensive line. And, you know, for those of us who don't know the ins and outs of who's supposed to rush where, I think most people who watch this team expect an uptick, a significant uptick in production up front. Less time for the quarterback to throw, more sacks, and theoretically more turnovers. And we'll see.
Yeah. Ed seems to be pretty dang happy. I found it interesting, his characterization of, because Von Miller has flipped to different sides of the formation with Greg Rousseau, and sometimes he's lined up right next to Ed Oliver, and sometimes he's on the other side of the formation, and he's, you know, a position away from him. And some people are like, oh, wow. Must be a major headache for opposing offenses when you have those two guys next to each other. Ed actually likes it better when he's on the other side, because now you have to kind of divide and conquer. Instead of sliding all your protection to those two guys, now you got to kind of divide and conquer and come up with an answer, which he thinks for the opponent is harder.
Exactly. There's more space. Yeah. You know, I mean, Vaughn's going to get some attention, and they've only got so much attention they can give without going thin on the backside of where Vaughn is at. And if and that's – and Ed feels it already and makes good sense. What happens when you slide the line, what happens is what they mean is that both guards and the center slide towards one of the other tackles. And that leaves the off tackle, the one that the protection slides away from, kind of on an island. Depending on what front they're getting, when those two defensive tackles in their alignment, they'll slide that way and leave one tackle by himself as far as offensive linemen are going. Now you can always, you know, throw a tight end over there or chip that tackle's man with a back coming out as well. But the four offensive linemen slide to where the three defensive linemen are, and then they kind of zone it off and try and hold those three guys at bay and pick up any stragglers if they can as well. So you can imagine when you're playing a three technique, which is outside on the outside shoulder of a guard, and that guard and the center slide away from you, or want to slide away from you, it opens up a ton of space inside. And notoriously, rushing from a defensive tackle spot like Ed Oliver and Aaron Donald do, and those defensive tackles do, getting space is like, wow, it's like taking a breath of fresh air. Those guys don't get to work in too much space. And that affords it when you got a guy like Vaughn away from you rather than on the same side, even though he's a tremendous player.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they choose to deploy Vaughn and move him around. Do they move him around a lot?
It's
move
a problem.
A little? Does it depend on the opponent? It'll be interesting to see. We do have to take a break here. When we come back, we'll take a quick whip around the league. The Kansas City Chiefs have their number one pass protector coming into camp after a dispute about the franchise tag. We'll tell you what's going on there. And which NFL punter has struck it rich? He's in the AFC East. We'll tell you who when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. It's summer, and Bills head coach Sean McDermott wants us all thinking about sun defense. Coach is passionate about skin cancer prevention as it runs in his family, and he takes sun protection very seriously. Most importantly, of course, is wearing sunscreen. Right now, you can stop by your local Wegmans for all of your sun protection needs. Wegmans will donate $1 for every Wegmans sunscreen product sold through August 31st in their Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse stores. It's a great way to protect your family, help the fight against skin cancer, and think sun defense like Bills head coach Sean McDermott. If you're coming down to training camp, there will be a sunscreen booth to get completely covered and protected while you're standing out here watching practice with nary a shade tree to be had near the grass practice field. So make sure you
it's hot.
Cover up.
It's so hot.
Some NFL news and notes, Steve, for you. Okay?
All right.
First and foremost, we know Chandler Jones was one of the two big free agent signees of the Las Vegas Raiders. He and Davante Adams was a trade, not a signing. But Chandler Jones, one of the biggest free agent signings for the Raiders this offseason. He has missed the first four practices of training camp with an undisclosed ailment. But now, according to reports from NFL Network, there is no concern or anything to really worry about with Chandler Jones. So it must be a minor ailment, but he has missed four practices. I mean, that's not nothing. But
well,
I know it's early. So
it'll be nothing if he comes to four practices. It'll be all forgotten.
Right.
So, yeah. It's well, so early. Every rep, I remember what it was like to be a young player in the league. You just feel like every single rep is going to make or break your entire career. You really feel like that.
Four practices. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. I took a bad rep. I dropped that ball. I don't know what I'm doing here, you know? And then you can't make one catch on a nice little quick and easy slant. It's like, oh, gosh, I'm going to be all pro as a rookie, you know?
Ride the roller coaster.
Oh, my gosh. It is such a thrill ride. And believe me, I've said this a ton, and it's really true. You believe that they're going to cut you before you can even get off the field.
Oh.
And then you believe that they're going to offer you a contract extension.
Yeah.
The first chance they get.
I know you already have a rookie contract. We want to tack on three more years.
You know, we'd like to give you 10% of the team. You're just such an outstanding guy. You know, it's one of those, you just ride that roller coaster, and everything you tell yourself, you just really believe. I mean, it's exhausting. It's exhausting to go from high highs to low lows so quickly.
Buried beneath the Deshaun Watson suspension announcement, Orlando Brown, the left tackle of the Kansas City Chiefs, as we know, has not been at Chiefs training camp, or he had a contract dispute. He had been franchise tagged. They could not agree on a long-term contract. He did not want to sign the franchise tag, threatened to not come to training camp, but now it looks like he is going to play under the franchise tag designation here in 2022. He had not reported to camp seeking a new contract, but now he is on board. He's in camp, and it looks like forward they go, and they'll have to figure out a long-term agreement at some later point in time because you're obviously past the July 15th deadline while he's on the tag to reach a long-term agreement. So he's got to play on the tag this year, free agent again next year. Do they get a contract agreement done with him between the end of the season and the start of free agency? That is what we have to keep an eye on. And then, Steve, punters are people too. They deserve to make a living just like everybody else in the NFL. And Jake Bailey, the punter for the New England Patriots, will be doing that to the tune of a four-year, $13.5 million contract, which includes $6.5 million signing bonus. So about half of it guaranteed. Nice little contract for the Patriots punter.
Very nice. Right, good for him.
And I mean, he was a 2019 draft pick. He cashed in.
Yeah. That's not easy. But I like we had, we're going to have Taron Johnson in on the show at 2, and he's another one. You know, he's one of those guys you like to see get second contracts. They did not get one done for Levi Wallace this last offseason.
They did for Taron Johnson.
They did for Taron Johnson. They did for Matt Milano. There's been guys like that. We know the story, but at this point in history of the NFL, it wasn't this way when I was playing. That second contract is an enormous compliment to what you've done in your first few years in the league, because notoriously it's a big contract, and for a punter that is a big contract. Congratulations! It's something that young players aspire to, and to see him get it. It's easy to say, well, this guy, you know, like Debo Samuel, all these guys signing these deals. And Taron Johnson and Matt Milano, same thing. It's life-changing.
Yeah.
You forget that. It is absolutely life-changing for these guys. And bless their hearts, they deserve it, I guess.
It is time for us to step aside for a break here. But as Steve mentioned, when we return, we will have one Taron Johnson joining us here for the second hour of the show. Buffalo's nickel cornerback, talks about how things are going on the field with the defense and a pretty momentous occasion happening for him off the field this offseason. Taron Johnson coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you from training camp at St. John Fisher University. And pleased to be joined now by Bills cornerback Taron Johnson. He of the number seven now, after the number change from last year. People at training camp here had to do a little double check of the roster, make sure they had the right guy.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen you long enough. We know how you run, man.
Right.
So I can identify you just by your gait. But why don't we start there? What made you move to seven?
Well, I was seven when I was in high school.
Okay.
And I kind of just wanted to get back to that number. And I just felt like it was an opportunity, you know. I mean, the whole time I'm watching NFL, you never get to see the skill guys with single digits.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm in the NFL at that time, and I thought it'd always be cool to have a single digit in the NFL.
Not for
lucky seven.
Yeah. I thought about this when I was playing too. It's kind of you wearing your high school jersey number.
Yeah.
It's kind of a gift to your school, right?
Because yeah.
The kids who follow you at that school, you mm-hmm. know, you're kind of legendary there, as every NFL player is at his high school.
Yeah.
But to see you wearing that same number
mm-hmm.
in the NFL. It carries weight for those kids who follow you. Am I right?
Oh, for sure. For sure. You know, it's not too much of a big deal. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
right.
I'm going to be playing the way I'm playing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
you were,
the day,
you were 62.
Exactly.
And be fine. Yeah.
Exactly.
Don't wear 62.
Not that there's anything wrong with 62. I'm
yeah.
just saying.
Well, that's a big guy number.
Talk to us a little bit about the vibe, the defensive backs. I mean, Trey still working to come back. Kyrie making a little bit of a splash. But, you know, you, Micah, Jay Poe, Dane Jackson, kind of a lot of familiar faces back there. How's mm-hmm. the vibe in camp so far?
I mean, it's been good. We've spent a lot of time with each other on and off the field even before this year. So our camaraderie is really, really good. And hopefully we could just continue to elevate our games on the field.
Taron, I wanted to check in with you because Isaiah McKenzie is having a nice camp.
Mm-hmm.
How high of quality are those reps for you? Because he's had a pretty consistent camp so
mm-hmm.
far. He's done a nice job. What's it been like going against a guy that's built lower the ground than you, who can get in and out real quick?
I mean, it's great. You know, it's definitely his speed is definitely something that's hard to match with other players. So just having that and going up against that every day is
yeah.
just helps me, you know what I'm saying? And going to help me ready for the season.
What subtle differences or maybe major differences are there this year in this training camp with this crew of guys on defense, with the guys up front coming back off the season you put together last year's number one defense overall? What kind of subtle differences or evolution do you see or sense, or is it too early for that?
I mean, I feel like it's a little early, you know what I'm saying? We got to play
mm-hmm.
against other teams, you
right.
know? I feel like that's when we really can see. But just as far as I feel like our D-line has came such a long way and just how they're getting after the quarterback is very exciting to see.
Do you anticipate new wrinkles from opposing offenses? Because it's on paper now. It's a statistic. Your nickel defense is essentially your base defense.
Yep.
How is Coach Frazier kind of preparing you guys, knowing that teams are anticipating that from the jump, and they might try to force you out of that? They were trying to do that late last year.
Yeah.
What are you guys kind of trying to anticipate as best you can? You won't know it until you see it, but you got to believe those OCs have been working all offseason trying to have an answer for your nickel defense.
To be honest, I'm not really sure. I know we're focused on playing our offense right now. We're not worried about no
okay.
teams in the
mm-hmm.
future. So I'm sure when we play those teams, we're going to have a better understanding of what other teams are trying to do, you know. But as far, I like to be used as, I mean, a Swiss Army knife, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I
right.
feel like I could do anything at a high level, whatever the game plan may be, you know. So I just want to make sure that I'm getting ready for that this training camp and for the season.
Yeah, that's for coaches to handle, I guess, more than anything else. But proof of that, proof of your versatility is the fact that Coach Frazier's like, well, throw whatever you want at us. We're leaving Taron on the field. Yeah. So too bad for you. Like, you figure it out.
You know, exactly. During training camp, I mean, all the players, both offense and defense, are aware of what's going on both sides of the ball, the injuries and how it's going. The offensive line's kind of a mess right now. You got Saffold's out. Tommy Doyle just went down today. Deion's the only back after a couple of days out. You got Spencer Brown's not 100%, hasn't gone. So the offensive line's a little bit of a mess, but also your defensive line, and usually the defense is ahead of the offense anyway. What's the vibe going around camp? Is that with the offensive line, is your defensive line on your side playing so well this early in camp? I mean, Josh and Case Keenum and Matt Barkley, I mean, they have no time to throw right now. And I guess it's a little bit of both, an offensive line with a bunch of guys that haven't played together, and an upgraded defensive line. What's the vibe in camp, and what's the roster? What are you guys in the locker room talking about or thinking about in defense? And when you watch the film, I mean, do you discount how well it's going right now?
I mean, we see it, you know, but sometimes maybe coach doesn't stop the play even when it possibly could be a sack or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So we're just really focused on the DBs, essentially, you know what I'm saying? When it comes to when we play our first game, then we're going to be more tied into what the D-line's doing and actually see their real effect. Because right now, coach, there'll be a sack and coach won't blow the whistle, you know what I'm saying? And
sure,
we're still playing out there. So we're really going to see it come game time.
And for people who listen and watch practice, they don't blow the whistle because they don't want to waste the rep for 21 other guys.
Yeah.
Either the defensive end, Von Miller, or you come in on a blitz,
yeah,
get a sack.
Yeah,
they don't want to stop the rep because those other guys need to keep going and get some rep.
Exactly.
So everybody does that. But for fans who are like going, you know, why don't they do that? That's the reason.
Taron, I know you've been going against McKenzie the bulk of the reps here in camp. And that's when a lot of you guys say, I'm ready to play somebody else. I'm tired of looking at number six every day. But with Jamison Crowder getting back closer to getting team reps, how much would you welcome just lining up against another guy in the slot just to get different work, if you know what I mean?
Because
you got a beat on Isaiah. He's got a beat on you. It's how about let's mix it up a little bit, right?
No, I agree. I mean, even when I get Steph or Gabe in the slot sometimes, I'm like, okay, somebody different. You know what I'm saying? Because everyone runs their routes a little bit different. Or just have different skill sets, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So just seeing someone else different is really going to help me and get ready for whoever my matchup may be come the season.
The one thing people don't realize, you get in there, you may not take a rep against Isaiah, but you watch in one-on-one films, and you go in you watch all these guys take reps, you know everybody on your roster so well, on offense and defense. It's you just know. I mean, it's just so tired of seeing the same thing.
Yeah.
I know you're just a week into camp, but even so, those reps get pretty monotonous pretty soon. And what is the coaching staff saying about, you know, what's next, how they're going to spice it up maybe a little bit?
I mean, our coaching staff, they definitely would like us to go with different people and not go with the same person consistently over and over. But obviously, when the ones are up, the ones,
ones
are
and
up.
The ones and the ones and the ones,
you're definitely going to see the same person multiple times, which is good and bad at the same time, you know. Just trying to make the best of it and get better.
We hear that Kyrie Elam asks an awful lot of questions of you guys, which you'd hope a rookie would do.
Yeah.
Because that's how you learn. Learn from the guys that know. What are the kinds of questions you find he's coming to you with?
Just really asking about the defense. You know, there's some little details that he's still trying to get figured out that he's definitely improved on since we first got back out here. So just really the little details and nuances, whether he's asking me, Dane, or one of the safeties.
Is it stuff like leverage, like where's my help, or what is it? It's like all those things?
It's a combination of everything.
Yeah.
Anything you really can think of, he wants to know about it. And, yeah, so he's gonna ask his questions.
Give us an idea, too. Now, this is you're a wily veteran now. I mean, you're a – how did your offseason go this year? Have you continued to tinker with what you've done? Is there anything new that you tried this year that you're feeling some benefits from, or you know, give us an idea of how the run-up to training camp's gone for you this year now that you are kind of an established player?
Really just trying to be more consistent, whether that be my coverage, whether that be my tackling, just on everything, just repping at it in the offseason and wanting to take it to practice and wanting to take it to the game. You know, I just feel like if there's one thing I could do better, I could just be more consistent, you know, and that's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of reps and just trying to – perfect those reps.
We know that the beef that they added up front on the defensive interior is not only bigger, I would argue, nothing against the guys previously that played in there, I would argue that group's even more athletic as well. How does that impact you as a run defender in this defense? Because I would like to think that you can stay cleaner even as close to the line of scrimmage as you are when you got those big guys in there that can hold. You know, Daquan, you can't move that guy.
Yeah.
Jordan, same way. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Tim when he's in there.
Yeah.
Have you seen a difference in how clean you are in the run front because of that beef that's inside?
Honestly, yes. They're getting penetration. They're getting to the ball so quickly that, I mean, it's going to be hard for me to make some tackles in the backfield.
Right, you know? Because they've already done it? Or
yeah,
what?
Oh, okay. They've already done it.
Okay, I got you.
But that's fine with me. You know, I love to see it. Whatever can help our defense get better. It's not so much about, like, stats and stuff like that. But just is whatever we can do to win, that's I'm all for it.
Yeah.
All right, what about you guys come into this training camp a little bit like last year. After the 2020 season, the COVID year, you guys win a home playoff game, go to the AFC Championship. Come back last year with some high expectations, but this year, I mean, the expectations could not possibly be higher.
Yeah.
How are you guys handling that in the locker room?
I mean, just taking it one day at a time. I'm just trying to get better every single day. Like, that's my main goal right now. And I'm not even thinking about the season yet. I'm still thinking about training camp every day.
Yeah.
So really just trying to get better every single day. So when it's time to step foot on that field on Thursday night, I'm ready and my team's ready.
You had a pretty eventful offseason.
Yeah.
Also, personally, congratulations. Yeah. You got engaged, right?
I appreciate it.
How much did you plan for that one? Like, how long was that in the works in terms of, you know, making the night a special night?
It was about, I'd say, 2-3 months in the works before. You
good
know,
for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just felt like
got to do it right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And Meg is her name, right?
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
Do you guys have a date yet, or?
No, we don't have a date yet, but we will soon. We will soon.
It'll be in the off season.
It'll be in the off season.
It'll be after February. That's for sure.
It's not
for sure.
Hopefully, it's not the first week of February.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not.
Very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Congrats, though. I was happy for you to see that.
I appreciate it.
That was great. Are you good, Steve?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
all right. We appreciate you stopping by, Taryn. It's always good to talk to you. Really
appreciate
you coming by. Hang here for a quick second. That's Taryn Johnson joining us here, your number one nickel cornerback in your heart, number seven on your program. We'll be back with more here on One Bills Live in a second. Stay tuned. Kids Day returns to Highmark Stadium as the Bills host the Broncos for their preseason matchup on August 20th, presented by Fisher Price. The Fisher-Price Junior tailgate kicks off at 9 a.m. in Lot 6, bigger than ever, featuring a Power Wheels track, giant inflatables, a real fire truck, games, and more. Also, a limited quantity of Bills wristbands will be given out as a gate giveaway, and special concessions available this year, including popcorn, ice cream, cotton candy, snow cones, root beer floats, and a kid's lunch deal featuring a hot dog, chips, and every preferred beverage of any kid under 10, a Capri Sun.
Nice.
Mobile ticketing only, as usual. Visit BuffaloBills.com/KidsDay for more information. August 20th is your date. Bills Broncos.
Second of three preseason games.
That is correct. And the second of the first two are home, the last one's away. So hop on it.
Also, that game is happening at like a 3 o'clock in the afternoon game, right? Or is it a noon game? Let me check.
Yeah, you check. And
let me check. I've got it right here. It is
1 p.m.
1 p.m.
Yeah.
And it's a Saturday, right? August
20th.
I think that is a Saturday. Let me check that, too. Yes,
it
it's
is,
a
yes.
Saturday at 1 p.m. So that's a fun, it's a great day, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
No problem.
Yeah.
For families, for sure. Wanted to get to the tweet sheet where we were asking you what will be the biggest benefit to the Bills' defensive backfield in 2022. Your choices are there on the Twitter poll, at OneBillsLive. Scott says, my vote for biggest benefit is position depth. If one or more of the projected starters goes down, you need capable backups. I think the Bills have good depth and could be a huge factor this season. What is your position on the depth of the defensive backfield, Steve?
I think this is as good a depth and maybe the most proven depth at corner that they've had in, you know, since McDermott took over. Dane Jackson played extremely well in the last third of last year.
Kyir Elam, top-notch first-round draft pick. Tre'Davious White coming back. Cam Lewis, Taron Johnson. They've got some guys, and they've got enough to cover any deficiencies if they lose one or two guys to injury. I don't have a problem putting any of those guys in. So I think depth really is a strength of this club, but I don't know that it's going to be the biggest difference we see in this year's, because if we won't see it if there's no injuries.
Right.
I think the thing that's going to make the biggest difference is the D-line. Yeah. That's my call. I know we're a little bit of prisoners of the moment because the D-line is looking so different and playing so well right now, particularly with a scattershot offensive line lineup. You know, they're going to look
good. Yeah, they're undermanned.
And it's also very early in camp, and the defense is always ahead of the offense because, you know, they read and react and just play instead of having to choreograph every footstep and hand placement. And it's easier for them to get it right with enthusiasm. But, man, they do look good, and they do look different up front.
Here's the thing I had to actually remind myself last week when I was doing the show with Maddie on Friday. I had to remind myself this is Jaquan Johnson's fourth NFL season.
Yeah.
His fourth NFL season. You don't see enough of these guys on the field on Sundays. You're like, you know, he's still a young guy in the pipeline here. Whatever. Fourth NFL season. The guy's got experience. Dane Jackson, third NFL season.
Yeah.
It's not like these guys have been here for a year, you know, trying to learn the ropes. They've been here for multiple seasons in this defensive scheme, which has not changed. And so if called upon, I think you have to feel pretty good about the people they can turn to play meaningful snaps, whether it's, you know, Jaquan Johnson, Dane Jackson. Kyir Elam is a supreme talent, as you mentioned. I just think that the depth is experience depth, even though it might not be viewed as experienced in the eyes of Bills fans.
Yeah,
because they haven't seen him enough.
Right. We've talked about, you know, Dane Jackson and some of the third-year players that are going to be in the pipeline. We talked third year in the NFL. We said it a lot last year with Dawson Knox. It's a kind of I don't know what you call it, a rainbow year or a huge growth year. It's one of those. It's where this got everybody blossoms. You know. In their third year, it's a huge year for a lot of players when they finally get it together and they come back for their third season. They've got a great off season under their belt because it's the first off season where they come off a year after not being, you know, a rookie. The third year just seems to be a comfort level for guys where they can really spread their wings. Dane Jackson is a great example. You know, Milano in the past.
Ed Oliver last year.
Dawson Knox.
Even Motor Singletary had a good finish last year.
So it was at that third year, and it goes way back. It's not just like this point in history. It happened to me in my third year. It happens to a ton of guys because they consider themselves, at that point,
proven player.
A player that is a fixture. You know, they've got a place here, and they start to feel like, okay, I can now I'm going to attack my craft and not think about my place on the roster kind of thing. And it's a huge step forward for most of them.
From Justin, he says, having a healthy Trey back is huge for the defense, but having a greater pass rush can help any DB. We heard Taron Johnson talking about it here just a few minutes ago, how valuable that defensive front is going to be for them, not only in the passing game, but as I asked him, it's going to keep him clean in the run front also, because he's a pretty critical component of the run defense as this scheme is drawn up.
Well,
and with those big guys up front, he doesn't have a guard screaming around the edge, pulling, ready to pick him off on a pin and pull play or something.
It's great for Taron. In the run game, let's face it, he's a linebacker all of a sudden. He's not the slot corner. He's a linebacker. That's what you got to do. That's where he's at. He's next to the formation. And if they're running it, that's what his job is. He's got to stick his nose in there and make a tackle and sometimes fend off a block or navigate traffic to get there. So, a defensive line that can get penetration and move the line of scrimmage or at least hold the line of scrimmage is going to make his job better in their run game. Because teams are, like we've talked to Leslie Frazier and we've heard a couple of places, teams are going to try and pry the Bills out of that nickel defense once in a while to see if they can get them into different personnel groups. They have been very, very reluctant to do it. Taron Johnson's a big reason why.
Because he's so versatile, Tweet sheet, incidentally, brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. You heard the truck horn there. We have to take a break, though. When we come back, one We're going to stay here? Okay. So we wanted to take time to pass along to you the comments of one Kyir Elam, addressing the media after practice today, has been getting tons of compliments thrown his way for not only his approach to the game, but for asking the right questions to teammates and coaches, and not backing down to anybody on the field, including All-Pro Stephon Diggs. Here is Kyir Elam.
The story of camp the first 2 days might have been you going against Stephon. A couple of nice battles, a little physical there, but what's that been like from your perspective going against him every day?
We have like the same like type of personality, man. We just want to win, like not even like a game, like a whole, like every rep. So I mean, I try to make it to where it's not just him; it's the whole receiver core, like whoever I go against, man. Just trying to win every single rep, and ultimately not just for my benefit, it's for just to help the team. Because you know, if I perform well, you know that like that competitiveness, you know, kind of just helps the team just kind of compete. And you know, I love that. I love competing, man. I just want to win, like I said. So it just honestly, it's just trying to maximize my potential to help this team win.
How great is it for your development that you're going against Diggs and Davis and Isaiah every day like this, all the reps you're getting?
I mean, I feel like this elite group of receivers, man, they push me every single day, man. It's no taking days off. Always going at me, always talking trash. But at the end of the day, I really respect those guys because outside the white line, they just like as humble as could be, man. They always try to give me pointers and help me, you know, just elevate my game. So you know, I couldn't be more grateful for those guys.
To follow up on that, what does Steph do outside the field to kind of make that relationship work when it becomes so competitive?
Like I said, like between those white lines, we go hard. Like we go at it. Like we don't play on the same team, but like outside of the, you know, the white line, he's always trying to like give me game of, you know, how I could, you know, take care of my body, what makes him comfortable, what makes him confident, you know, things like that, just to help enhance my game. So, you know, I couldn't be more grateful. You know, he's just like a big brother I never had, you know, and I appreciate that.
How do you balance, though, playing with an edge but not crossing the line? Because I know it's got to be especially tough now that the pads are on.
Right. Honestly, shoot. it comes with self-control, honestly. Just trying to just be more mentally tough right now than physically tough, because you know I have to take care of my teammates. So I don't know, man. I just got to come down to just controlling your mental, I guess.
And I know I've seen you working off to the side with Dane and some of the other DBs, and then we see Trey kind of off on the track doing his thing. How much time have you got to spend with him, maybe in like the film room or just inside the locker room or whatever? And like, what have you taken away from those conversations?
I just try to be a sponge and just soak up everything, everything I see and everything he tells me, honestly. You know, I try to listen and also apply, like, because a lot of people just listen and just, like, forget what they say. But, like, honestly, I just try to take whatever he teaches me and just try to apply it on the field and to help me become a better player. You know, I know it's kind of difficult for him because he's, you know, rehabbing and things like that, but he's been a heck of a role model, you know, for me, so.
Come into camp, they do their work, they keep their head down, and you don't really notice them as much. You're physical with Stephon Diggs, you're demonstrative, it's a good play. Is that just who you are? Did you think about being anything different walking into an NFL camp?
Nah, man, I just try to be myself, honestly. You know, I when I came here, I was just so grateful that, you know, the Bills just, like, drafted me. So you know, I just wanted to give my all and never take it for granted. I mean, the attributes, you know, I think I have to, you know, try to be physical, you know, I mean, fast, you know, long, but like I feel like the fundamentals and technique will take me a long way, so that's what I'm trying to add to my game.
You're in a unique situation because your dad and your uncle played in the league. So I mean, since you've been here, have there been conversations back home, maybe called home or uncle, just to kind of share some ideas or get some, I don't know, whatever pointers or have there been conversations?
Yeah, for sure. Their biggest thing for me is just to never lose my confidence and just to be out and go out there and try to just and always compete. You know, that's what I try to bring to the table. Like, you know, there's gonna have your. I'm human, so I'm gonna make some mistakes. I'm not gonna always win every single rep, but for them, it's just like just go out there and compete your behind off, and you know, my hard work and dedication, it'll plays will come. But for now, just you know, just go out there and just go hard.
That's when you came up here, like, what was his parting shot as you went off your first training camp?
I don't think he was that. He wasn't. He wasn't nervous or anything because he know, like, you know, I take this serious and I don't take it for granted. So he was just like, I was already becoming a man, but now it's just like I am the man. So it's just like never lose my edge. You know, just keep staying humble, keep getting God first, and everything else will work out for itself.
You've got information coming from a lot of directions, you know, the wide receivers, cornerbacks, everyone, like, giving you advice and all that. How do you make sure it's not too overwhelming? Like, how do you keep things calm? And it could be a lot at once for someone for the first season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, just staying level-headed, but also, like, trust but verify. Like, if somebody tells me something, go research it or go, like, ask somebody else just to make sure, you know, that's the right information. Because, like, everybody can tell you a lot of different things, but, you know, just having trusty resources to back it up with. I mean, that's kind of what I try to do, too.
I know it's different positions, technically, but how much can you lean on Jordan and Micah in this defense and their knowledge and playoff depth?
Oh, man, they are, like, the big brothers I never had. They, like, those two guys are alpha males, man. And I'm always just trying to, like, I'm sitting next to them, man. I just try to just listen and just apply, like, because they have so much knowledge and they have so much confidence to the point, like, they out there just playing without even thinking sometimes. So it's just like I couldn't be more grateful just to hear those guys back there behind me and just make sure I know, like, I could trust them. So it's just I'm just trying to earn their trust now at this point.
You made a lot of plays in the first week, obviously the one today with Dawson in the end zone. You know, your speed was what everybody was talking about when we got here, but your physicality really stood out. Is that something that you notice teammates, coaches kind of feed off of when you make a play like that?
I'm just trying to do more of that, man. I mean, I don't try to live in the past, man. I'm just trying to just keep it going, make more plays, be more physical, and just be a heck of a teammate. Yeah.
How was it for help prepare you for coming into the NFL?
I don't think there's any conference better than the SEC. Big, fast, physical, you know, no better conference than the SEC. But, you know, just coming from the SEC, I don't think I'm better than anybody. You know, I think it helped prepare me, but also I don't think that puts me over the edge of anybody else because, you know, it's all about what you do next, not what you did in the past. So.
You've been around the game, obviously, your whole life, but is there anything since getting to training camp that you kind of learned and you weren't expecting to learn or kind of took you by surprise?
It's way better than college. It's way better than college. But honestly, I would say, like, just the margin for error, because, you know, Josh is elite, Gabe's elite, Isaiah's elite, Stefan's elite. So, like, the timing and getting in out of your break, like, the ball is, like, right there. So, like, just the margin for error, like, there's no time for slip-ups and late movements and false steps. So I think that's really the big difference from college.
Playing the SEC helps. They don't have a lot of Josh Allen in the SEC.
No, not at all. He's one of a kind.
Yeah, going against them, you know, this last week or so here at camp, what's that been like?
He's getting me so much better, man, because, like I said, I can't afford a false step or bad eyes or just, like, you know, bad leverage because he's going to take advantage of it. And he's the best quarterback I've ever seen in my life, man. So, like I said, I mean, God makes no mistakes, and I'm meant to be here, and he's just getting me better, hopefully, you know, for me to go have a great season.
Watching him throw those back shoulders to Davis and Diggs.
Yeah.
There was a couple times where you had a perfect cut. I don't know that you could have done much more, and they still completed.
Yeah.
Does that get frustrating at all? How do you make sure that you just kind of ride with it?
Yeah, at first, I was frustrated because it was like I said, I just want to win every single rep, so, like, I got to take a few deep breaths and be like, all right, Kyrie, like, there's some stuff, man, just perfect ball. You just got to keep competing. Like my dad said, like, I called my dad, like, after the first couple of days, they kept hitting me, and it was just like, just keep competing. Like, I mean, you can improve, always can improve your technique, but you're a pro now. Like, you can always strive to win every single rep, but it's not going to be the case. So just keep competing and never lose your edge. So
how tough was Or maybe not how tough, but how much did it take for you to swallow that, to accept that?
I love to compete, so, and I love to win first and foremost, so it's kind of hard all the time, man. But like I said, when I called my dad, he told me, like, you just, like, just keep competing, like, just work to improve your technique. And with Coach Butler, man, he just, he's always trying to make sure I play with proper technique and fundamentals. So he just makes sure that that's my main focus right now, you know, because the plays will come, like you said, but playing with better technique and fundamentals will help me, you know, make plays in the future. But as of right now, just got to keep competing, never lose my edge.
Tyre, the defensive line has been balling to start camp. What have you seen out of them early?
They're monsters. They're freaks. Our first string and second string and third string, they just come rolling in, and they just are monsters. That's the only word I can explain. Like, they just get after it.
So Kyer Elam impressed with Buffalo's defensive line through the first week of training camp, along with just about everybody else that's watched this unit grow. And Josh Allen is the best quarterback he has ever seen. That's a pretty lofty statement. I know he's a young guy and hasn't seen everybody, but that's saying something.
Yeah, I mean, he's best quarterback a lot of people have ever seen, too. So, I mean, he's not alone in that. And Josh he comes in his rookie season seeing Josh fully formed, you know. He wasn't here 3 years ago.
Right.
You know, 4 years ago. So, it's been a long time coming. Bills fans have watched it. In the last 3 years, well, this one included, this one last year and then 2020 is when we saw Josh
at critical mass.
Yeah, emerge as one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. And then it's nice to have him on your team when you come in as a rookie and see that. It's like,
this will work.
We've got a chance, yeah.
Yeah. We will break here. Steve and I come back with one more segment as we have to get more of your thoughts from the tweet sheet in terms of what you think will benefit the secondary the most in 2022. Your choices are there at One Bills Live. We're back in a moment. Stay tuned. Back to the tweet sheet we go. What will be the biggest benefit to the Bills' defensive backfield in 2022? Alex says a healthy Trey White. With Elam in the fold, the ability to be versatile in our coverages will be huge because, in his opinion, Trey White and Kyer Elam can play just about any defensive scheme you want them to, press man, off man, provided Elam comes along in that area.
They've always played both, and most of the analysts will say they play a lot more man than you might think they do with Elam and Trey on the field. They may play a lot more man.
Yeah, because I think as much as we all appreciated Levi Wallace's game, I think we can all agree he's not the premier athlete that Kyer Elam is physically. He doesn't have as many physical gifts.
He was a technician, was in the right spot at the right time, but he didn't overpower anybody with his size or his speed or athleticism. But he was a solid, very solid player, a really good player, and a four-year starter for this club on a team that went to the playoffs three out of those 4 years. So, yeah, he was a good player, but you substitute in a Kyer Elam, who's a phenomenal athlete with a different skill set, and it allows you to do different things.
Yeah. From Alan on the tweet sheet, three words, Von freaking Miller. Hurrying up the quarterback and making the quarterback throw bad balls will make the DB's days easier. I would tend to agree with that. It's not even sacks, Steve. Even if you can force hurried or ill-advised throws, that means more opportunities
you can move
for the guys
on
the back end to make big plays.
If you can disrupt the quarterback, it's all much better in the passing game for the defense, and that's what the idea is. Certainly, you know, they're not going to get a sack on every passing play that they face. It'd be nice if they, you know, force some turnovers and some bad throws and some quick throws or that kind of thing, get some cheap fumbles in the pocket, that kind of stuff as well. So that's the general idea. I mean, that's why you think, right? You get a pass rush,
you can
disrupt everything in the passing game at both ends of the ball rather than just the secondary.
It's pretty crazy to think that you're talking about a defense that was already number one against the pass. Now you're going to improve, conceivably, their pass rush. And it's also a team that has been among the league leaders in turnover differential, top five in takeaways. Now you're going to add a legitimate pass rush to the equation to give that defensive backfield that's had a lot of takeaways the opportunities for more takeaways. I mean, it could really be If things go according to plan here and Josh takes care of the football on the other side, a very, very lopsided turnover differential in favor of Buffalo.
Well, you'd
season.
Like to think so. You'd really love to think so. Don't know that it'll happen that way. But you look back, and we've talked a lot about the number one defense, and they should be very proud of it. But you remember how that season started? They got a week. They had a weak schedule, a very weak schedule, as it turned out, because they were playing the NFC East last year, the AFC South last year.
And AFC South, NFC South.
NFC South, right. Because then you throw in as well Washington, the football team. You know, they threw up two shutouts in the first 4 weeks of the season. The Houston Texans, they shut out because Davis Mills was making his first start.
Yeah. First road start. Anyway.
Miami Dolphins, week two, they shut out 35-0 because that was the one where Tua went down after in the second series of the game on second down and didn't come back, and Jacoby Brissett comes in as a backup.
You got the Saints playing with their third-string quarterback, Trevor Siemian.
Between those, you got the Washington football team, and it was – what was the guy's name? Was it Taylor Heinicke?
Taylor Heinicke.
Taylor Heinicke was the quarterback. Then you got Davis Mills at Houston. Then the Chiefs and the Titans. The Dolphins with Tua. Then you got Jacksonville that you lost to. And then you're feasting on Zach Wilson, the Saints backup, which was Trevor Siemian.
Third stringer.
Oof. You know, then you got Mac Jones. You got beat by Tom Brady. The Carolina Panthers, who was Carolina Panthers guy?
Cam did not play.
No. It was somebody else.
Was it P.J. Walker? No, he didn't play.
All right, but you get the idea.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
It was not a gauntlet of quarterbacks, and you know, they struggled against some pretty good quarterbacks. Tannehill, even Carson Wentz had a good game against them because they ran the ball so well. The Chiefs and the Titans, Tannehill, and it just when they faced good quarterbacks with Brady and all those guys,
Mahomes,
they struggled. They beat a couple of them, but it was a weak schedule, and they feasted on it, and so they were a good defense, whether or not they were number one. But getting number one, I think, and doing some of it was because of the quarterbacks they faced and the schedule that they had. And I think you can say that about every defense every year. But
Jack on the tweet sheet says, have to get Trey healthy and back in the lineup. They're better with him. Trey back in the lineup adds to the depth of the whole group and allows them to bring along Elam rather than tossing him to the Wolves right away. Is it interesting to you that with Elam being a first-round pick, they see if they have to start him right away as tossing him to the Wolves when 5 years ago they did the exact same thing with Tre'Davious White?
I don't think they'll be afraid of it. If he comes in, he's playing.
I just find that narrative interesting. You know what I mean? Like, suddenly it's throwing a rookie to the Wolves.
Yeah, corner is different than quarterback.
Maybe it's because there's more at stake this season for this team than there was in 2017 when they just put Trey White out on the field.
Yeah, sure, but maybe. The expectations are certainly in a different spot.
That's what I mean.
I would say no. The only thing that you worry about throwing a rookie in, the only position is really the quarterback spot because it's so complicated and everything happens so fast and everything's focused on that guy. At corner, you can help the guy at every position, guard, left tackle, all of it. Safety, you can help those guys play okay and find themselves a little bit and grow into it. No question. You can do that on the field. Quarterback, it's hard to hide that guy.
A little bit.
It's hard to hide that guy. So I don't, letting the guy find his legs or helping him along or bringing him along slowly, it's not really a concern for anything other than the QB.
Josh says, I feel that the consensus is Trey White plus pass rush, so I'll take a different view. Finishing drives with TDs on offense and more splash plays, being more physical against the better running teams on defense would benefit an already consistently great year after year pass defense. So he's putting it on the offense. Finish drives with touchdowns, more splash plays, being more physical against better running teams on defense. I'll sign up for that.
Yeah.
And I think they're poised to do it with the defensive tackles that they have.
I agree.
That is it for us. Steve and I will see you right back here. Same bat time, same bat channel, 1 p.m. See you Tuesday here from training camp at St. John Fisher.